Usually we need to write a fairly elaborate introduction to these programs, explain what the program is about, why you might care to listen. Not today. Joining us today here on Midday is the man of the hour, the week, probably the year. Governor-elect Jesse Ventura has come by our studios today to talk about his amazing victory on Tuesday and his plans as the next governor of the state of Minnesota. Governor-elect Ventura, welcome to Midday. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Gary. My pleasure. And I told you off air, you're partially responsible for this, you know.
Well, you were kind enough to come by during the campaign and
sure. Well, there was radio stations like this and many others throughout the state of Minnesota that helped me get the message out because, of course, we didn't have the kind of money that the Democrats and the Republicans could have and spend, and we had to be very prudent with the money that we did have, and we had to time it, and I thought we did very well at that in you know, hitting about that last 8 to 10 days with a very strong media blitz, which no one had seen. You know, and we were also fortunate that a fellow by the name of Bill Hilsman came on board with us. He of course, orchestrated Senator Wellstone's win in 1990, which in a way shocked the world, I think, a little bit back then, too. And he's a very talented man. He seems to understand the political arena, and he understands the candidate well and what'll work for the candidate. And he did an outstanding job of, you know, and we took a lot of laughter maybe over the Jesse Ventura action figure and all that, but if there was one thing I learned in my years of wrestling in its own way, that if you hook the kids, the parents generally will follow.
Okay, now I know you were confident and you said publicly you thought you had a real shot to win, but weren't you just a little shocked Tuesday night like everybody else was?
Yes, I suppose I was somewhat. I mean, the night started off, everything lined up. I mean, when I was driving to Canterbury Park, it was a full moon. And when you looked up, you could see some kind of, it was a clear night, but there was some mist in the air, and there was this and that, and my family even said to me, some strange things are going to happen tonight. And, you know, and when we drove there, and again, appropriately, I think Canterbury Park, the place where long shots occasionally are going to win in the state of Minnesota, where the unexpected can happen. And it started off, I think, very much like a horse race. Attorney General Humphrey came out of the gate fast. I was third. The first couple of precincts came in. The Attorney General was ahead. Then I think at about 4% or 3 or 4%, I passed the mayor. And then it was at 5% that I actually, I think, got like a 140-vote lead over the Attorney General. And at that point, I said, well, now no matter what, I at least led. You know, no one can take that from me, that here at 5%, I actually have the lead. And then, lo and behold, the lead kept expanding and getting bigger, bigger, and bigger. And then, as the horse race, if I can use that, went on, then, of course, the mayor passed the Attorney General about halfway through the race. I remember at one point it was, I think, 38-31, mm-hmm. I think was the percentages at one point, where they went into a dead heat, and then the mayor passed the Attorney General, and then the mayor made a bit of a run for a while and started to catch me a little bit. And I was going out, I had addressed the crowd a couple of times, a huge enthusiastic crowd out there, a lot of young people. And I went out to address the crowd, I think, for the third time. We were preparing to go out there. It was closing in on midnight. And all of a sudden, just 2 minutes before we're ready to go out, the television camera showed my name with that check by it. I had been projected the winner. Naturally, the eruption took place in there. They all went crazy, and I was like, you know, and this wasn't in front of the regular people. This was back in our intimate setting there, the room we were in with close friends, family, and close workers and all that. And I held my hands up. I said, wait a minute, wait. I said, these experts have been wrong all along. The polls have been wrong all along. I said, I can't go out there and declare myself the winner. I said, my goodness, there's 40% of the electorate hasn't voted. I said, I'll look like a fool. What if at 80% I lose the lead? And to me it was, but Bill Hilsman again came up to me very calmly and said, Jesse, and then all three stations had it up there. The three or four, even all four of them got it up there. I don't dare discount Channel 9 either. And Bill came up to me and said, you're the winner. And I said, Bill, how can you say that? They've been wrong all along. What if they're wrong again? He said, they know. He said, at this point in time, if they do that, they know. So, you know, I kind of walked out, again, not wanting to seem overconfident that, yes, indeed, we had won. But then as the night went on and we saw virtually hardly any change go from that point on, they were indeed right, and I'm the governor-elect.
Was there ever any point when you said to yourself, what in the world have I done here?
I think that probably happened not in front of the public, but I think it was when my wife and I got to the hotel room and the door shut, and all of a sudden I'm being escorted by all the security. I mean, the Minnesota State Troopers are around me. They're, you know, and that's unusual for me. I'm the kind of guy usually, you know, I come and go as I please. I'm 6'4", 250, and, you know, nobody usually messes with somebody like me too often, unless because they know they're going to, you know, even if they beat me, they're going to take a couple lumps in the process. And, you know, I've got all this security around me, and I think it was when my wife and I actually got in the hotel room, we shut the door, and for some reason we had a bottle of Dom Perignon in the basement in the refrigerator of the house, and we brought it with. And we got inside that door, and I popped the cork on it, and we poured ourselves each a glass, and I think we looked at me, and she looked at my wife, Terry, looked at me and said, my God, you're the governor? And I looked at her and said, and you're the first lady. And we kissed each other and hugged, and I didn't really go to sleep, because I'll actually tell you in all honesty, I got a little tipsy with lack of sleep. I've always been
the
one.
Governor-elect?
Hey, I've always been one, when you open a good bottle of Dom, you ain't pouring it down the sink. You know, you finish that baby. and so we sat up, and I figured I didn't have to face the press till 5, and what the heck, I can always blame it on being tired. You know, and it was funny, in the paper they said how laid back I was that morning, obvious from exhaustion. And I just let it fly. Here, you got a first. There you go, Gary, you got a first. But no, we finished it, and I kept watching the TV, and I couldn't go to sleep. You know, you can't go to sleep. And for the people out there, you truly don't know what it feels like. But, you know, there was the second aspect. It wasn't new ground for me, because when I won mayor, it was as exciting, too, in its own way, winning the mayor first time in the city of Brooklyn Park, because that's your very first election. And then in that case, I actually looked at my wife that night and said, oh, my God, now I have to do it. You know, but this time it's more, you know, that paved the way for me a lot, Gary, of knowing, you know, I have done it before as mayor, and here we've done it again.
I have heard tons of theories as to what the Vote Tuesday was all about. What's your interpretation of your victory? What do you make of it?
I'm proud of the fact that Secretary of State Joan Gross said it would be a 53% turnout, and I believe we ended up about 63, if I'm not mistaken. That makes me feel good, because that was our big message on that 72-hour ordeal. It was not only being called a victory tour, to me it was also called the Get Out to Vote Tour, because I believe strongly in people taking part in the system, and I believe very strongly that we need our young people to believe. We need to get our young people involved and not to be apathetic. And the message that I got out very strongly, the young people came forward and they were counted, and they were not polled voters. They were that silent vote that won the election for me, and I knew they could. That's why, if you looked at my schedule the last 2 weeks, I made at least, I believe, 5 to 6 appearances at colleges. Mm-hmm. To rally those college voters, and my reception at the University of Minnesota homecoming day was unbelievable, you know, just remarkable, and they were so behind me, and I thought, if I can inspire these kids to vote, we truly then have a shot to win this, and we did.
Well, what do you think the voters were telling you, Jesse Ventura, to do?
I think they weren't telling me necessarily to do anything. I think they were more reacting to the fact that They didn't want some sugar-coated campaign of professional politicians telling them what they wanted to hear. You know, in my case, I didn't always tell them what they wanted to hear. I found it kind of funny when Senator Moe made a statement, the young people came out for Jesse, but if they really knew what he stood for, they wouldn't have did it. All I stood for to the young was saying, I told the young people, don't be dependent upon government. Stand up for yourself. That was the message I carried to these campuses, that, you know, don't sit and look to the government to solve your problems. Be an individual. Go out there and solve them yourself. Don't look at the government. And so I don't think my message was wrong to those young people. I mean, you had the Humphrey Moe people promising them free college, free this, free that. And I tried to bring the message to the kids like my son. When I give my son something, and he's a great kid, he doesn't take care of it. But now that he's working and he buys it, oh, does he take care of it. Why? Because he paid a price. And that's the message I wanted to carry to those young people. Go out, earn it, because you'll feel a lot better about yourself in the end if you know you earned it rather than someone giving it to you.
Let's get some listeners involved here. A lot of people have questions. By the way, if you're near a computer and you want to email a question in to Governor-elect Jesse Ventura, the address here would be election@mpr.org. First caller is from St. Paul. Rebecca, go ahead, please.
Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Rebecca.
First of all, I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
I'm absolutely delighted by the events of Tuesday. I have a couple questions for you, but first I just want to tell you a bit about three of your voters that I know of. We're all around 60. We all have high education, one a PhD and two law degrees. We are people who have worked hard in the Democratic Party by attending caucuses, and one of us has worked a number of years in a campaign in the DFL party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we did not vote for you.
Sure.
But I think we are partially responsible for your being elected, because for one of the few times in our whole voting lives, we had an opportunity to vote for a candidate that we really wanted to, because your experience told us that a vote is not wasted, even though it's not for one of the two major party candidates. We all voted for the third party, having toyed with voting for you, but we voted for the Greens, knowing that you might very well win, and that was fine with us.
Okay, well, and I'm glad that message got out, because, you know, that was one of the things that really irritated me during the campaign, and especially from the Republican side. They kept trying to hammer home to the public, if you vote for Jesse, it's a wasted vote. And I kept saying, you don't vote for someone to win. You vote for someone you believe in, and if they win, fine. If they don't win, it is not a game of picking a winner. It's not going to the racetrack and trying to pick the lead horse that'll win. You go there because you vote on ideas, and you vote on the person that represents your ideas, and if you fail, fine. That doesn't mean you wasted your vote.
It's been pointed out that two-thirds of the people who voted didn't vote for you. How do you get them in the fold?
Well, I don't think I need to get them in the fold necessarily. I think a strong message was sent out fiscally, on the fiscal end, because Mayor Coleman and I do not sit that far apart on fiscal issues. You know, we both sit pretty strongly on being conservative on fiscal policies, and if you look at the vote totals, I think there's a mandate there. I think the people spoke very strongly that they feel we are highly overtaxed and highly overregulated here in the state of Minnesota, because if you add up the mayor and I's totals on the fiscal side, you're looking at $1.5 million. If you add up on the more spend Democrat issue of government being more involved and government being the answer to all, they only had $500,000. And so from the fiscal side, I think that the voting public sent a clear message with the mayor and myself, you know, on the fiscal end of it.
Are you still interested in that trigger mechanism whereby
Yes.
if the state got a certain amount over and above what they were expecting, that would automatically be returned?
Yes. And you could set that trigger at any level. I mean, it doesn't have to be a bare trigger at, you know, a half a percent over budget. It's flexible. You could set that trigger method to where you always, I mean, they've got plenty in reserve now. You know, I haven't totally looked at the budget, but there's over $1 billion over there sitting in reserve for if there's some economic problem that comes and takes place here and all that. But yes, I'll still work for a trigger mechanism because I think there should be. It was proven with the last budget surplus that, I mean, I, as much as those legislators talk the talk, when it comes to walking the walk and they get that money in their hands, I mean, it's like prying, it's like prying their fingers, you know, and bending them and putting them in pain to try to get them to release that money back to the public. And, hey, let's set it on a budget. That's where we're supposed to do it, and set the budget. Then the legislature agrees with that budget. The governor agrees with that budget. If by chance money comes in over that budget, we don't have a right to that type of money because we did not set it in our budgets when we did them.
What's your best guess at this point? Mr. Ventura, can the state afford both that kind of trigger mechanism and a permanent tax cut, or are you going to have to wait on that for a while?
I don't know yet. I'm still working, getting my transition team. You know, we're rolling right now and we're moving forward, but at that point, rest assured, the budget is the main thing right now. We've got to submit one. The budget is priority 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else will come after the budget. The budget is the main focus from here till when we have to submit it to the legislature when they come in session, and I think we have to submit it sometime in February.
Mm-hmm. Transition team, there's rumors that you've already decided who's your agriculture secretary. Rumors afloat around the state.
Can
you give us a name?
No, I cannot, because I have not spoken directly to this person face-to-face or on the phone yet, and I think it would be not very kind to this person. You know, I think he should hear it from me, not over the radio. And I'll give you an example. When I did the Minnesota Vikings football for that 1 year, 91, I was let go. Well, I learned of my departure via the press, and I didn't like that at all. I felt that I deserved a little more respect than that. And I felt that the people who were letting me go should have had a little bit more respect for me as a person to have individually called me and told me, and instead I learned of it from the media. And so I feel the same way about the particular individual that I have in mind, that he or she should learn it from me, not me blurting it out over the press and them learning of it that way.
Can you give us an idea of the kind of person you're going to be looking at, not just for that job, but for all these jobs?
Well, I'm going to look for a person, obviously, in the expertise in the field. Rest assured, this person has a very strong farm background. A very strong farm background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why wouldn't you? I mean, I'm not going to tell a farmer how to farm. You know, and when you live within the industry, you're certainly going to know, just as I wouldn't expect him to be able to tell me how to promote a wrestling match, you know, or broadcast one for that matter. You know, it comes down to expertise in the fields that we work in. And again, as governor, I will try to surround myself with the very best people I possibly can with expertise in all the fields that are required. And then from there, you manage them, and you have to have confidence in them, and there has to be a mutual loyalty between, you know, the two parties. Loyalty is going to be a very strong thing with me. People who are loyal to me and loyal to the state of Minnesota.
Scott, your question for Governor-elect Ventura?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say that I did vote for Jesse, and I dragged everybody that I could with me.
Thanks, Scott.
Also, on the issue of having 60% of the people not vote for him, I think that, or actually I feel strongly that if you had dropped either of the other major candidates or the Libertarian or the Green off the ballot, that their voters would have overwhelmingly flocked to Jesse as their second choice rather than going to one of the other ones.
Very good point.
But I do have a question. I realize you're going to be pretty busy for a while, but as things start to settle down, I was wondering who I could contact to hopefully set up a meeting with you about some information on property taxes.
Well, I would tell you at this point in time, I couldn't say who directly to set it up with now. allow, I would tell you this, allow me to be sworn in. You know, that'll happen January 4th. And so for right now, we have no time to deal with those issues because we have to, you know, be going through this transition that is very big over the next 60 days. And then when I get sworn in, and then, of course, I'll be dealing with the legislature very strongly. They'll be in session, and I'm sure that'll take up a great deal of my time. I would say that probably springtime would be the best time at this point in time to do it. And at that point in time, I'll have, you know, secretaries for everything there is to do. I'll have a chief of staff. I'll have probably a number of ways you can get in touch with me.
How can, I think it'd be kind of tough to keep your bearings with all the fawning and courting that you can expect as the new governor. Like, I don't mean to put Scott in that category.
Sure.
But, you know, everybody and their uncle is going to want a piece of you now, and they're going to want to sidle up to you. And how are you going to keep your bearings?
Well, I guess it's you sit back now and say, gee, I didn't realize what a friendly guy I was. I have so many friends. You know, because you do. You get all these friends. Friends you don't even know you had that become your friends. But, well, you just have to, you know, you judge people's character, and certainly like the night that I gave my acceptance speech, I told the people point blank, yes, I'll make mistakes. I'm human. That is what I think won the election for me, the fact that I showed the people that I was human. And I told them that I simply made a promise that I'll do the best job that I can possibly do. And what can you ask of anyone more than that, of them doing the best job? It's no different when I coach my football team. You know, we're playing a great team tonight, Blaine. And all I can tell my kids is go out on that field, play your hearts out, leave everything on the field, and if you do the best that you can possibly do, then winning or losing is irrelevant. You walk away with your chin held high, and you go on, and life goes on. And that, you know, as far as all these people, well, you know, again, you know, loyalty will be important to me very much.
Minnesota Governor-elect Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour. Next caller is from Kirkhoven, I believe it is. Jessica?
Kirkhoven.
Kirkhoven. I'm
Kirkhoven.
Sorry.
You can tell I've been there.
Yes.
I can say it.
Jessica, your question?
Yes. Hello. Thank you for knowing the name of the town I live in right now.
I know it very well. I used to have in-laws that lived there.
Oh, that's great. We just moved here from St. Paul a couple days ago. And I just wanted to say that there's all these experts out there trying to figure out why we voted for you. My husband and I both voted for you. It wasn't my first time voting. I'm 20. But it was the first time I voted for somebody I actually believed in, and it was the first time I voted for somebody who won. And that just really restored my faith in government. And I think the thing that just made me believe in you so much was that you're for the people, by the people. You got into that office because of us, because we voted for you, and now you're not going to go answering to some party or your buddies that already are in the legislature. You're going to answer to the people, and I just think that's wonderful. And I lived on Summit in a one-bedroom apartment, and your new house has the biggest yard in that area, and I never once saw Arnie out there enjoying it. I hope you get a chance to.
I will do my best. I don't know necessarily if I'm going to give up my ranch, you know, at this time. I do enjoy that, and that's my wife's dream. She raises and trains American saddlebred horses and gives riding lessons and all that. So the First Lady, I want her to, you know, continue doing that because that's her great love is horses. So I'm not sure, you know, I'll be between the two places, but rest assured I'll be living in the mansion because I'm sure there'll be many long hours at the Capitol, and the mansion's a heck of a lot closer. And believe me, when my head hits the pillow, I like to do it as quick as I possibly can. And but I do like sleeping in a water bed. I wonder if they've got a water bed there. I'll have to check that out because I do enjoy a water bed. That's the kind of bed I like to sleep in. Although these new air ones are supposed to be good too. Gary, what kind do you have?
I don't have one. I just got the old-fashioned.
The old-fashioned mattress?
Yeah.
I don't care for them. I don't know. Maybe because I'm bigger, I like the bed to contour to my body a little bit more.
How are you going to keep all these people interested and excited? I mean, once it gets into a day-to-day routine, you know.
Hopefully they won't have to be excited. Hopefully that we'll do our jobs and they can go on with their lives doing their jobs. And I mean, our unemployment rate is at a record low right now. Everyone's working here. The economy in Minnesota is better than the economy of the national average right now. And hey, I want to just keep Minnesota being a great place. You know, people right away expect Jesse and some massive changes. There's not going to be massive changes. They'll be more subtle than they will massive. You can't, it's a three-pronged check and balance system. And I tried to state that, you know, a lot of the questions you get throughout a campaign is, what are you going to do about this? Well, people fail to realize, yes, the governor carries an agenda, sure, but it's still the legislature. They're the ones. It's a representative government. Your legislatures bring forward, they pass it on their end, and when they're done with it, it comes to my desk, and then I either sign it or veto it. And so it's a matter of those legislators, you people staying involved with your legislators. Let them know what you want, because it ultimately comes back to you of keeping that involvement. Keep their feet to the fire. You've hired them. That's their job that they've accepted to do by running for office and you voting them into that office. So you let them know what you want them to do. You let them know. And that way, then when it comes to my desk, if, like I said during the campaign, if I deem it good for Minnesota, I sign it. If I deem it bad, I veto it. And then they certainly have the ability, if they think I'm out of line, they can override my veto. And I accept that. And then, of course, they answer to you. You know, the constituency, if you don't like them overriding my veto, call them. It works. The stadium proved that, Gary.
What do you think? Are you going to get good cooperation from the Republicans and Democrats at the Capitol, or do you suspect over time they will try to stick it to you?
I don't know, but they better watch who they're sticking. I'll just say, you know, I fully go there expecting to cooperate. I don't want to fight with anybody if I can help it. I'm not a mean person. Look, I fought all my life. Hey, I'm getting a little older now. Who needs that, you know, as you get older? But certainly I'll stand for what I believe in, and I'm sure they probably will too. And, you know, we'll see what kind of marriage comes out of this, you know, and whether we can avoid a divorce or not. But I'm not someone who is impossible to deal with. I understand that government is based many times upon compromise. And I think the other thing I think I learned from being mayor is that no matter what decision you make, someone will be unhappy. There is not one decision that can ever be made where you're going to find 100% of the people that are going to go, boy, I'm glad of that. You know, there's always going to be somebody unhappy, and you make your decision and you move on.
Do you see yourself making your decisions on the basis of your beliefs or on what you think most of the people would want you to do?
I believe that it was when I became mayor and I went to Washington lobbying trip to get the finances for Highway 610 that's being built up in Brooklyn Park right now. I had an old-time politician come up to me there, and he said to me, Mr. Mayor, you're that young new mayor, aren't you? And I said, yes. He said, can I give you a piece of advice? I said, certainly. He said, always vote like you're not going to seek re-election. And I've always kept that in mind, because what that means very simply is then you're not giving up your integrity. If you vote like you're not going to seek re-election, you can then vote your conscience very strongly in the fact that you're not going to vote just trying to get re-elected again. Mm-hmm. And there are some votes that you'll do that may be unpopular to the majority, but if you deem them to be right for the state of Minnesota, then you have to be able to stand up and take that stand and take an unpopular stance. And maybe 5 to 10 years from now, people come back and say, you know what, Jesse was right. Look at here. He was right.
Al, your question for Governor-elect Ventura?
Jesse, congratulations.
Thanks, Al.
You are a breath of fresh air. And I've been listening and been on hold.
Jeff, not always. Not when I smoke a stogie.
That's all right. Enjoy. I've been on hold a half an hour. I probably laughed about 7 times since I've been called in. It is great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I voted for you. Actually, I started voting when I was 18 when the Reagan race was on the first time. And I think it was Anderson. I voted independent.
Sure.
Pretty much independent. Fiscally conservative like yourself, but socially moderate. You ran a great campaign. The advertising was 100%. I can't wait to see what you're going to do for us. I mean, I think it's going to be great. I know you haven't had any real, issues brought up. I know it's really early. I'm not trying to, pin you down on anything, but I do have a question on just kind of where you're leaning towards this more than anything else, just for informational. One of the things I brought up, I called once when Arnie was on NPR and brought up one of the things was transportation, and he kind of marble mouth and mumble mouth about, let's try and get, same lane thing was okay deal, and, public transportation, this and that. Well, I've been interested in traffic issues for about 15 years, and I've been watching what MnDOT, I know at that time when Arnie was on, they were talking about the MPCA was under fire big time, and let's abolish MPCA, and I called in and said, no, I think we need to abolish MnDOT.
Al, can you answer your question here?
Sorry.
We want to get to some more
questions. What's your opinion on MnDOT and how the transportation uses in the state are?
Well, I'm not going to look and give an opinion on MnDOT right now, but I'll just tell you a few things that I feel. I think we should open up these so-called sane lanes. I think they're insane lanes. Half the time you're stuck in gridlock traffic and you look to your left and there's a lane with nothing happening. I mean, there's nobody on it, all the cement's there, and I'm thinking, wouldn't this alleviate some of the gridlock I'm in if we could be over one lane and be moving? And so to me, I believe some people will carpool, but I think they're a small minority that are going to carpool, legitimately do it. I think it's high time, and so many people are cheating. The last time I was in the out there and the same lane was open, I'm caught in gridlock traffic. I'm looking to my left, and I think I counted 7 or 8 out of 12 cars that were supposed to be carpooling had single people in them driving and breaking the rules anyway. So what's the point? Either you're going to arrest them, well, the government will love to put fines on them. That brings in more revenue. Maybe that's the real reason they're there. To bring in some more government revenue by catching people in them. As far as rail goes, you take a lot of criticism over, shouldn't we have rail? Well, government's job is in the transportation business. They make highways for all of us that own cars. Well, people pay taxes that don't drive cars. So doesn't it stand to reason that alternative traffic methods should be used also? I think if we can afford it, I have no problem with mass train traffic. I loved it in Georgia. They've got the MARTA down there. It's phenomenal. I rode it all the time myself. People would look and, you'd get the fan with, Jesse the Body, what are you doing on this? And I go, because it's the smartest way to travel from the airport to the CNN Center. And I'd go there and back. I'd go all different hours. It was a fantastic system, and I'm not going to bankrupt the state to do it, but I at least want people to realize that if we don't look at it, I also worked a lot in Los Angeles. Go out there. Spend a couple weeks in L.A. and drive around where there is no mass transit hardly at all, and 7 lanes one direction, and it can take you an hour and a half to go 10 miles. Out there in L.A., they don't tell you like here in Minnesota. Here in Minnesota, they'll tell you, it's 10 miles. Out there, everything is judged on time. It may only be a mile and a half, but they'll tell you, at this hour of the day, you better leave now because it's going to take you an hour. And that's how they judge it in L.A., and rest assured, L.A. can happen in Minnesota 25 years down the line for us, or 20 years down the line for us. So I think we need to take a hard look. Let's see what happens with this initial rail. If it fails miserably, but if it's done right, Dallas, Texas had a lot of naysayers down there, and now even the naysayers are saying it's been phenomenal. I'll use it. Shoot, I'd love to have it to go down to a Timberwolf game and not have to bother with that parking. Not only that, they jack it up $1 every year. Every year that I go down there, it started off $2, now it's up to $5, and who knows where it'll be next. you know. And I, you know, so I'd love to have a rail type system where you could jump on it and go to the games, and when you're done, you could jump on it and go home. And
of course, you don't have to worry about parking anymore now. You've got the state chauffeur driving you around.
Well, for 4 years I do. It's kind of nice, and it's strange though. You know, for a guy like me, like I haven't been in my Porsche since I've been elected. It's sitting there collecting dust. Maybe, Gary, you interested? Put it up for sale? You know, I may not need it. For, there's a hand going up out there. Somebody wants one through the glass.
Yeah, we got one email here. I don't believe I've heard you ask this question, and it seems like a reasonable one. I'd like to know what your religious views are, says the emailer.
Well, my religious views are I'm a Lutheran, and I attend a terrific little almost country church up in the Corcoran, Minnesota. I love the minister up there. I've never been real big on organized religion since I was in the military, because I won't go into great detail on why, but I just saw a lot of third world countries living in poverty while the religious buildings were reaping with wealth. And I always kind of wondered about that, you know, why that happens, you know, and why does it turn into such a business, which it does do at times. But I'm a member of a small little church. We've got a fantastic Pastor Briel is his name. I like him because he reminds me of Tommy Lee Jones. And I'm a big fan of Tommy Lee Jones. This guy's got a great style. I'll put it to you this way. I've never heard him preach a sermon where I got bored. You know, because he's a fiery guy who truly loves what he does. And he also, when he approached me, when we met, you know, as whenever you go to a new church and are accepted by a new church, the minister always comes to your home. And when he came to my home, he spoke with me for about 5 minutes, and he looked me eye to eye, and he said, "You're going to come to church when you feel the need to, aren't you?" And I looked at him, and I said, "Yes." And he said, "That's fine. I can live with that."
Lisa, your question for Jesse Ventura?
Okay, Jesse. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
And one thing I really like about you is you say what's on your mind, because I do the same thing.
And I get in trouble now and then for it, too.
Well, so do I. But my question is, for the past 17 years, I've run in the Twin Cities Marathon.
Yep.
The governor's mansion is right at about mile 23, I think. My brain's not working real well then. But never once have I seen a governor out there cheering me on. And at least you know what Lycra is. Are you going to be out there cheering us on this year?
I will tell you, absolutely. When is the TC's done, though, already, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the first Sunday in October.
I will tell you this. The next Sunday in October, absolutely, unless I'm sick, lying in bed, I will be there cheering you on, because I'll tell you, my brother's a marathon runner. I'm not anywhere in the class of yourself or those other runners, but I do put one foot in front of the other. I can't wait to get back doing it, because I haven't been able to for 3 to 4 months now. I've gotten fat as a pig, in my view. You know, not in everyone else's view, but in my view, I'm fat and out of shape right now, and I don't have the name, the body, for nothing. So I will be happy to be out there to cheer you marathoners on, that you deserve it. And I'll tell you what. What I love about runners, you'll never run into a runner that is not helpful to another runner. They are people that truly are they know what they go through. They sacrifice tremendously to run, because it's a sport where it's not glory. You got to go out there day in and day out and run. There is no shortcut to running. And those people that train for marathons give an ultimate sacrifice of training in which to complete a marathon. They can rest assured, if they run by my governor, I'll probably be out there with the hose squirting them if it's a hot day, because I remember I ran the Hopkins Raspberry one time, and there was nothing better than those people had their hoses out. And when you get hot, they'll spray you with the hoses, although usually you don't have to in October when the Twin City goes, because the weather's usually brisk enough where you don't have to do that. But any running you do in the summer, you always appreciated it when somebody'd hose you down. But I ran a lot in the Navy SEAL training. You know, in SEAL training, you run in combat boots in the sand and usually soaking wet. Try that on for size sometimes. Combat boots aren't exactly Nike or New Balance when it comes time to run. And running in the sand, the farthest I ever ran, for all the runners out there, we have a run in the SEALs. It's 16 miles from the amphibious base in Coronado to Tijuana, Mexico. and you run that in combat boots in the sand. And so that's a pretty hefty run.
Sports inevitably, of course, raises the question of the stadium. You said no public money, but what about, you have talked about possibly having slots out at Canterbury Park with signs over them, help poor Carl.
Yeah.
Are you going to push slots at Canterbury Park?
I won't push anything for a stadium, but I certainly am open up. I'm open-minded enough that if somehow they feel they need a new stadium, they can attempt to try to convince me. I will not allow public dollars, tax dollars to go for it, but I'm open for different private sector options of happening that way. I'm not opposed to user fees and all that, as long as the state doesn't have to back the bonds. Let the industry back the bonds. Let them do it like business does it. I just don't see, you know, to me, that stadium's only 16 years old, Gary. Do we replace our schools after 16 years? Absolutely not. A school is still considered new when it's 16 years. Champlain Park High School right now is 6-7 years old. You're telling me that 10 years from now we ought to replace that school? Absolutely not. The only way you'd replace it is if it burned down. You know, and it's not going to do that because it's far too much cement when they build it. But the point is, you've got a 16-year-old building there, and until they get their labor under some sort of, Mike Piazza just signed for $91 million for 7 years. If they can afford to pay him like that, they can certainly afford to build their own place to play the game.
Linda is on the line from St. Paul with a question for the governor-elect. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. I was calling because my sister is on Minnesota Care. Her family is. She lost her job with insurance, and the job she got didn't have it. And she has a child with asthma, so she really needs it. And I wondered what your position is on maintaining that program.
I'm not going to put people out on the streets. I'm not going to. You rest assured that your child with asthma, Jesse Ventura has, believe it or not, I'm a softie deep down in, and especially with kids. And I'm going to do whatever I can. I've been on the, let me give it to you this way. I've been on the board of advisors for Make-A-Wish of Minnesota since almost its inception. And that's what we do there, is we grant wishes to very, very ill children at times. And I love kids, giving them a good chance. And you know, certainly I want to make sure that kids have their health care out there, and that they're able to have that health care. And when they need to see the doctor, they can go do it.
Have you heard from Ross Perot, who is at least the nominal head of the Reform Party?
No.
Do you expect you will?
I don't know. I'm not.
Are you the head of the Reform Party nationally now, you suppose? I mean, you're the only person who's ever been elected to an office of this stature.
Actually, Russ Verney did place a call congratulating me. I got a message that he had congratulated me, and he's the actual head of the party right now. I spoke there at their national convention. I would like to clear the air, if I can, for a moment. No, I'm not going to seek the presidential nomination of the Reform Party. And I'll tell you why. One of my major criticisms of the mayor of St. Paul was the fact that he just became mayor for a second term, and then he turned around and ran for governor, and in hopes of winning, which would have left the city of St. Paul without a mayor, which would have required a special election and all that. Now, naturally, if I were to seek the presidential election, and if I shocked the world again, and I'll bet you know what? I'll bet you Gary won't say anymore that it's impossible.
I never said it was impossible.
No, I mean, no. I'm teasing you.
I did allow as how it was a long shot.
Okay, but I bet you the shot will be shorter if I said that, because you'll say, my goodness, he did it here. Could he do it again? But, no, I will tell you this. I was very critical of the mayor over that attitude of seeking. I felt he should not have sought the mayoral office if he wanted to be governor. And therefore, I've committed to the state of Minnesota 4 years of my life. And I will fulfill that commitment. And I have no intention whatsoever of running for president of the United States. And on a personal note, do you want to know why? You ever look at the presidents when they get elected? They come in so young, so virile, so handsome, so full of energy. 4 years later, they look like they've aged 20. I mean, they look 20 years older. I mean, look at President Clinton right now. His hair is totally grayed out. He's got rings under his eyes. He's looking totally stressed out. And I view, life is too short. I'm 47 years old. I'll be 51 when I'm done being governor. And you know, whether I seek a second term at governor, ask me in about 3.5 years or whatever that'll be, and I'll never seek a third term. I'll go on the record right now with that, because I believe in self-imposed term limits. You know, I'll impose them on myself. I don't think anyone should serve a day longer than we allow the president to do that. And so I don't want, not only that, I'll tell you why. Yeah, there's no way my wife is going to, you know, going to allow that to happen. I'll tell you that right now. There's no way. She's more, not opposed, but she's more or less like, what have you gotten us into now? You know, on this deal, because I mean, she's out there getting interviewed. They won't let her train her horses. She's, when I left her, it was People magazine photographing her riding across the pasture on our black horse jet, you know, and all that, which she don't mind doing. But it's like our phone has not stopped ringing. The first day, Gary, we had over 100 phone calls. And I'd like to say, for every person calling, if they're out there anywhere, I'd love to answer you, but it's going to be physically, virtually impossible to answer them all. And I appreciate the calls. I walked into my house. You'll love this. I got into my house. I walked in and looked around and said, did I die? Because it looked like a funeral. There were more flowers. I had more bouquets of flowers. In fact, one of the national press came in and looked around and said, gee, you must love flowers. You know, look at all the flowers, you know, because fortunately we had some help there from dear friends of making it look like they hadn't just arrived, putting them in vases. But, I mean, literally every room in my house must have 4 to 5 bouquets of flowers in them. And we've had to put them in the barn now. The horses have got them, you know, and nothing, no offense to that, but the horses are getting bouquets now in their stalls. You know, there's so much that have showed up. So, but it's a great outcry, I mean, or a feeling of, you know, how nice it is that people would think enough to send you flowers and when you're not dead.
National media, how have they treated you? Because there have been some pretty nasty jokes made about
should we
this.
Cause controversy?
Sure, love it.
I've been treated better by the national media than I am the local.
Explain.
Well, all through this election, the national, I think, was far nicer to me, and they were far, the local, they, you know... Just remember, you local media, seals don't get mad, they get even. Look at that. Look at them all out there. And remember this.
But you see,
now, this is tongue-in-cheek. I got to do this now. I'm the governor-elect, so I've got to talk. I got to say, okay, I'm joking. I'm kidding. This is fun. We're having a good, you know, okay, we're on the record now. There's an old saying that says, remember this, you got to sleep sometime.
But you know that the local media has been taken to task for being too soft on you, that we didn't nail you to the cross during the campaign.
Over what? What would you nail me on? Go ahead, Gary, nail me to the cross. Give
well,
me something
we,
new.
We didn't
give me something new
we
that
didn't,
I didn't get nailed
we,
on.
We didn't insist on enough specifics.
You wouldn't have gotten them anyway. You can insist all you want. The point was, haven't I been, you know, I'm in a unique situation. I haven't made promises, and I won't. I said very specifically, you know what it reminds me of, Gary? What part of no doesn't the press understand? When you say no, you know, they always have to come around then at a different angle. They didn't get the no. Oh, let's try the back door. Let's try the side door. Let's come in through the chimney. You know, my point was, and I thought I stated it very clearly, and it wouldn't have mattered what the press said. I said I would not make promises, any promises, that I felt there was any jeopardy of not being able to keep.
Let's get
plain and simple.
Let's get at least one more caller on here before
sure.
we run out of time. Sue?
Hi, how are you?
Very well, Sue. How are you?
I'm just fine. Congratulations, too. We're all very happy up here in Fox Home.
Thank you very much.
I just have a comment, Jesse. My husband and I were involved in the flood last year in Breckenridge. We lost our home, we lost a vehicle, we lost most of our belongings. And the most disheartening thing was that the Vice President of the United States came to Breckenridge, Minnesota, but we never saw our own governor's face.
Well,
so please don't forget about those of us that don't live in the big city.
I won't, and if you followed my last 72 hours of the campaign, we went on those RVs, and I'll tell you, we hit more of the small cities as much as we possibly could. And I won't forget them, and I'll tell you why I can't forget them, because my wife comes from Vernon Center, Minnesota. And a few years ago, I was asked to be the Grand Marshal of the Vernon Center Parade. And I went down there and I was the Grand Marshal. Well, I made him take me around twice because it was over so quick. I said, hey, you know, hey, wait a minute. I said, you know, let's take, I was in a horse drawn thing and I said, let's go again. I said, I come all the way down here. I want my money's worth, you know, but, and again, on a serious note for a moment, my wife comes from small town rural Minnesota, rest assured, and most of my family, a great majority of my family's gone now. So I'm very much part of her family, you know, even though there are, you know, portions of my family left, but I'm very much a part of her family, and they're not going to let me forget rural Minnesota. I have to go to Thanksgiving. I have to go to these family get-togethers, and if I start forgetting about rural Minnesota, they'll be happy to remind me.
Governor Ventura takes office, Sin City, here in Minnesota. Prostitution, drugs, it's all legal. Is that going to happen?
Talk to the legislature. That's another point. I mean, when that whole thing came out, what am I, going to legalize it? You ask you, Gary, how do I do that?
Well, you could propose it and push it pretty hard.
Nah. I'm not going to propose it. I never said that. Again, there was the question. Jesse, are you going to legalize prostitution and drugs? I said, absolutely not. But again, that was conveniently left out of all of those news stories, the actual answer to the question. All I stated was that I'm open-minded enough, and I have my own beliefs. I believe the war on drugs is a failure. And I'll say it again, because you must fight it from the demand side. You can't fight it from the supply side. We live in a free society. You can't even keep drugs out of Stillwater State Penitentiary. Those people are locked up 24 hours a day. How are you possibly going to do it out here on a street corner 24 hours a day? You must win it on the demand side. It's like a business. You don't create a business on supply. You create a business because of demand. If you simply make a product thinking that you're going to market it and sell it to everybody, and if there's no demand, you're bankrupt. You know, you can make all the widgets you want to make. If nobody's buying the widget, you're out of business. My view is just we must educate, and we must stop it on the demand side, then it'll go away. And again, my mother educated me. She lived through Prohibition. And prohibiting doesn't mean something disappears. We all have to be clear on that. And she told me, and I trust my mom, she was head nurse in anesthesia and surgery at North Memorial Hospital for years and years, served in North Africa in the Army in the war of World War II, and she told me the drug war today is no different than the drug war of alcohol when they prohibited. Who rose to power and got wealthy? Al Capone and the gangsters did.
Governor-elect Jesse Ventura, unfortunately, we're out of time, but...
Thank you, Gary. My pleasure.
Thanks for coming in today, and congratulations. Been quite a week.
Oh, yeah, and it's going to continue to be quite a week, and I just want to make one last comment to everyone out in Minnesota. Rest assured, Minnesota's doing just fine. Minnesota will continue to do just fine. It's just that you've got the most exciting governor in the United States of America at the head right now, leading our state. Don't let him say any of this stuff, because remember, Fargo won Academy Awards.